Mr. Painting,
yeah.
Reel 8. Mr. Painting, you were describing how the German, one of the German guards brought along some food for you. Did he then explain why he was doing this?
He said that he lived in England. He knew the English soldier, that he was a good fellow, and he didn't know what might happen to him. He might go to the Western Front, or he might go to the Russian Front, and he might be in the same situation as we were, and he would be glad of anyone to do the same, you see. And he brought us food, and he brought enough tobacco for us to have three cigarettes or three pipes of tobacco. And I wished him the best of luck wherever he might go, and hope that he pulled through, and I hope he did, because he had a little bit of human feeling in him, one soldier to another.
He had been called up in America.
He was in America, yes. He was living in America, and a fortnight before the war broke out, he received his calling up papers to come back to Germany because he was on the German reserve. Mm-hmm. He told me that. That showed what the German intention was, didn't it? Mm. And exactly what he said. He'd lived in England for 7 years, and then went on to America.
What did you do during the day in the camp?
Nothing.
Apart from lining up for just...
Nothing. We didn't do any work there. If they wanted anyone to work, a party of Germans would come round, and if you were in that number, well, you were in that number. I got roped in twice. On one occasion, I was in a party who had to go digging. The Germans were making two big mounds at the entrance of the camp, one on which they later mounted a field gun, and one on which they later mounted a machine gun, which commanded the camp. And we had to shovel earth to make these mounds. And the German, on the word iron, you put the spade in and get your earth on it, and on the word swar, you'd throw it as far as you could on there. Iron, swar. You did that while they were counting 50. When you'd done 50 spades like that, which was constant, you see, you were stood off, and another gang come on and did 50. Then you went back and did your 50, because we hadn't got a lot of stamina, you see, when that was it, and you had to work by numbers. And when this mound was filled, then they put these guns and that on. I only got caught once for that. And another little incident... we had a lot of Irish prisoners taken with us, you see. Well, Sir Roger Casement came round. All these Irishmen were all collected, and Sir Roger Casement came and addressed them and asked them to form an Irish brigade, and told them that if they formed this Irish brigade and fought on the German side, they would be fighting for Ireland, you see. And they were taken over to another part of the camp, given pressure rifle treatment, and then they were asked to volunteer. Not one volunteered. So they were brought back into the prisoners of war camp, and had a rough time. Well, in retaliation for that, the Irishmen raided one of their stores that they had there. In retaliation. Sir Roger Casement didn't get any volunteers out of the Irish prisoner of war. Now they said they would be true to their salt.
Did you have any sing songs or
oh, no,
any
not
sort of
that. No, no.
Like
they had then shortly after that in the January another little job that I had to do. They were building huts. Well, I got caught one day in a party where we had to carry the necessary things to make the huts, you see. Well, then in the January, we were accommodated over in those huts. You slept on a little bit of a mattress filled with seaweed or something, but it was a mattress anyway. You didn't sleep on the cold floor. And just had your one blanket, and we were quite comfortable in these little huts. And we weren't there long, before early in February. I don't want to remember the middle of January, that's right, when we moved to newly erected huts. The food here was poor and scanty, the accommodation bad, and the weather severe. I went on that camp, Gusto camp, as you can imagine, with 10,000 men in it, in that weather, the camp was soon a morass, you know, walking through there. And then, not being able to have a bath or anything, we were soon very verminous. And before we moved over to the huts, the Germans collected us and took our clothes off us, stripped us naked, put a dab of soft soap on our shoulder, walked through and had a sluice down under a spray bath. Then you were, your clothes while you'd been in there were fumigated, and they were issued to you again, you see. And then we went over to the hut, so we were fairly clean, you see. We were a new life. It, tell you, when I've killed 365 lice alone on one shirt, you can imagine what the conditions were like. However, a number of men died. If a fella lost his heart, you know, hadn't got the, he died. And the Germans made a distinction in death. If it was a Roman Catholic who died, there'd be a Roman Catholic party there, and he would conduct a Roman Catholic service. If it was a Protestant, no, you'd go there. And a corporal of the Cheshires, who kind of did an interpret, he knew a little bit of German, and he used to collect a number of us, and we didn't know who he was. We knew he was an Englishman. And we met him just outside the camp, and he'd say a little bit of the burial service over him. Mm. Several of them died there.
Was there any medical facilities?
Oh yes, I'll come to that. When we move over to those huts, a pal of mine was in the sick lines, the lazarette, you know, as the German called it, in the sick lines. And I went down to see him. We'd been, we worked together in the same town in civil life. He enlisted a week after me. We went to the 3rd Battalion together, we went to Egypt together, we went to the war together, and we was taken prisoner together. So, you know, we had a lot in common, you see. And we were both a sergeant. He was a sergeant the same time as me. We were both in the same company originally, but moved when we were promoted. And he was in the sick lines, and I went down to see him. I'd got a little bit of tobacco. He smoked a pipe. So we shared the last little bit of tobacco with him. I gave him half my last little bit of tobacco and last pipe. Next morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, the sentries came into the huts. "Rouse, Alice, rouse, the time has come." I wonder what the world time had come. "Get up, get dressed." Marched over to the cookhouse. We had a basin of Swedes, sweet soup, about 5 o'clock in the morning. And then we were marshalled and put in the train, and went off to Tingliff in Schleswig.
Mm-hmm. Was it?
Oh, and another thing I must mention. We didn't do any work in that camp unless you were unlucky, you see. But I don't know whether the Germans did it to give us something to do, because I'm sure they couldn't count us. But everybody in the old camp, according to your nationality, would be lined up, and you'd march all round the inside perimeter of the camp. That's the number of points. You're in fives, you see, easy for counting. And they're supposed to count you as you went by these different places, but I don't think they ever get counted, because you used to drop out and in and out. I suppose it was one thing you'd get satisfied them, and it was a bit of exercise for us. I was in the main camp, but when we went over to these little huts, which were quite comfortable, we didn't get anything of that. We just simply spare fires. But we weren't in there long. We went over about the middle of January, and I think it was sometime in February, then we went to Tingliff.
You mentioned that when somebody lost heart,
yes,
and then if they then fell ill after that, they didn't recover because they had lost heart, the will, yes, to go on. Was there any sort of particular type of person, or were they big fellows and little fellows?
No, just simply, they'd too much, well, the condition was too much, and they just simply lost their heart and died. Discipline was severe and the treatment was bad. Rifleman Turner, he wrote home and said he was hungry, he got no food. The Germans come down, we all had a number, you see, a registered number, a Kriegsgefangener number. The German, and you had to put that on your correspondence, and the Germans came down and got Harry Turner, rifleman. He was a South African veteran too. And tried him, but writing home saying he was being starved. And in the camp there was a post, a 4 foot square wood, about 7 foot high. They put two bricks under his feet, tied him to this post, round his arms and waist and legs, took the bricks from underneath his feet, and left him to hang there for 2 hours in a snowstorm. He was nearly dead when they cut him down. That was a punishment for writing home saying he was hungry. And I was walking through the mud one day before we moved over to the little huts there, and it was an absolute morass in the camp. And the Germans had got their water boots on, you know, their jack boots on. We had just got our ammunition boots. So I stepped out of the way to let this German pass me, but I was too near to him. He unslung his blessed rifle and hit me on the shoulder with the rifle. He aimed at my head, but he missed my head, hit me on the shoulder, just because I was too near to him. That was the kind of thing that happened. So we were vicious. Well, to go back to this early morning when they said the time had come, we had this Swede basin of Sweden water. That was our breakfast. And then we were marched out of the huts into these trucks. And we didn't know where we were going. And we eventually landed at Tingliff in Schleswig. We hadn't the faintest idea where we were. Went over the keel, which of course we didn't know. And when we got to Tingliff, there weren't many for us. There were building huts there, and they hadn't got barbed wire around the camp. There were no roof or doors on these huts. Anyway, we didn't get there until dark at night. We didn't know where we were. Well, we were just simply bunged in these huts, you see. We were glad to lie down anywhere. And the Germans put barbed wire around there quickly. They didn't stay the night. They were soon had some barbed wire around the camp.
Could you tell whether the guards themselves, the sentries having brought you along there and found that nothing was ready, did they look a bit sort of fed up and thought this was a bad job?
Yeah, well, of course, dark at night, you see, we were simply herded in there, you see. But I suppose they knew, and they had to go and do it. We didn't know there was no barbed wire around the camp at first, as we could have walked out. Of course we could have walked out, but you didn't know where you were. You had no idea of the bearing, you see. So we settled down, and they weren't ready for us. We were put in these huts, slept there, and we were marshalled in groups of 25. 25 and an NCO in charge. It was easy for counting purposes, you see. 25 plus one all the way through. You see, one NCO in charge of 25 of them. And that was how we were fed and how we paraded and everything, you see. and we lived for a group of men. You'd get a bucket of water with a loaf of bread in it, smashed up. That was your ration for 25 men. And that went on for a fortnight. The German, the commandant, was a pig, but the second in command was a gentleman. He said he was a shipping merchant in Hamburg. He'd done his time in the army, you see, and as they had to do, lieutenant. Then he retired into business, and he was a shipping merchant. He said, "I'm a poor man now." He said, "Your fleet has plucked my business up, you see." And he said, "We haven't got the food." He said, "If we'd got the food, we could give it to you." He said, "But with this blockade, we haven't got it." And he was a gentleman. Get postal orders sent to us. He changed them at the proper rate of exchange, you know, whatever it was, a pfennig for a penny. And when he went through the camp, of course, you had to salute all officers, you see. You saluted him. He'd say, "Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen." Oh, he was a real German gentleman, although he was an officer. And with the commandant, he was a pig. Well, we were quite comfortable in that camp, really, when we got settled down, after we got the roof on and the windows and that in. Mm-hmm. And in this, later we were joined by some French and Russians. And but while we were hungry, I scouted round, and there was a store building in a prisoner's compound.